What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. In this week's episode of season 18, our Justice Warriors season, we've got a guy that I met, Brian, what was it, 4 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, it must be 4 years ago, I reckon. Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan broke, he broke True Crime Binge. He was the last episode ever of True Crime, but he ruined it.
I remember that now. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. We just started chatting immediately, catching up, and I thought I'm just going to turn the recorder on. You guys are hearing this episode on, I think, the 14th of June is when this is coming out. For me, this is the last episode I'm recording before I go on. Since I have Ryan here, I'll call it holiday. I'm going on vacation on Wednesday. So it's a Sunday afternoon. We're getting ourselves caught up. And man, last time we talked, I want to say, was it during season one when Guilt first came out?
I think it might have been. I think so. Yeah. Jordan Vidori's one, I think. Yeah, I can't remember how many episodes I'd released or if I just finished the season, perhaps. But yeah, you guys were in there early on, before, you know, when the downloads were low, and it's a different world now, I guess. And I just had the one case. But yeah, I remember we spoke back then.
Yeah, and now you're juggling. That's what we were talking about beforehand. So what's, first of all, I seem to remember. Now, my audience is, we do Throwback Thursday episodes, so they're going to hear that old episode a couple days before this. I haven't gone back and listened to it yet because they won't hear that for a couple weeks. But I seem to remember during that conversation, you and your wife were thinking about having a baby, or she might have been pregnant, and it seems like there's been some development since then.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah, so back then, we would have been, I'm assuming, yeah, she would have been pregnant with...
Yeah, I think so.
Our boy then, who has now just turned 3. Yeah, we also have a daughter who is also 19 months old, sort of thing. So how life has changed. Just before, when I was recording, and then in the background, I can hear kids running around and my wife trying to shut them up. And I was just thinking, you know, so it doesn't come through in the mic. And I was like, man, how things have changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Last time you were just this free spirit, you know, running around. I think, if I remember right, we were like talking about how, you know, things are going to change when you got a little kid running around. And what you did with that is, now that you have two children running around the house, is you just started stacking more and more cases and seasons of Guilt on top of each other. So you were just telling me about that. Like, what is, I'm always so happy when I talk to someone who's new, because you do very similar type of work to what we do, where you do kind of real time investigative long form series. So that you get deeply invested into these cases. And at the beginning, you're just putting everything you got into that case. And then a few seasons later, you're putting everything you got into the current case, but you're never done with the other cases. Like, what's life like for you now?
Yeah, like we were just saying before you flicked it on, you know, and what happens with this stuff is that, you know, you work on a case and you put everything into it, you know, as you know, right? And that could be for 6 months or a year sometimes. Mm-hmm. You have sort of the official ending of that season of the podcast, but that doesn't really, it's not really the end, because in the background, you still have tips come in and there's always things ongoing. And when you've only got, sort of one case in your history or in that backlog, that's fairly manageable. But over time, you know, now I've just wrapped on season six, moving into season seven, you've got this pile of all these cases in the background. And on at least three, of these cases, I'm dealing with police in the background on things. So, you know, like the real important things going on, like right now, I'm supposed to be preparing a whole lot of stuff for the coroner for a case for season four. You know, but you don't talk about that on a day to day, but these are all the things that build up over time, you know, and so you're always very busy. And at the moment it feels like it's hard to sort of catch up.
And I'm a little jealous of it when I'm listening to season six now, and I think I'm seven. I'm at the episode where you kind of hit pause on the primary case there and started talking about one of the other cases. So it's, I don't know, six or seven episodes in or something. But what I've always liked about what you've done when I've listened to your seasons throughout the years is a lot of times you're working on cases where you're actively investigating, you're working with the police, whereas I'm always working on wrongful conviction cases where the police want nothing to do with me. And so I'm jealous of the fact that, like, oftentimes, I guess, how often does this happen? Because this current season, you're in Australia, you're not in New Zealand. How often do you have where the police are, you know, appreciating your help with these, you know, an unsolved case and they're working with you?
Yeah, it's a love-hate relationship, I think, at times. You know, I've found just in my experience, it's been easier to work with the police in Australia as opposed to New Zealand.
Really?
I'm quite sure why that is exactly. But, you know, like the case I was just talking about before, season four was Alana Cecil was a 16-year-old girl. She died of a suspicious heroin overdose back in 1996. And it was, the family always felt it was suspicious, but the police didn't. And at the time, there was really not really an investigation. No one was charged or anything. But after the podcast, now, you know, it hasn't really come out yet. It's going too soon. But the police are now looking to press charges on two people that had never, that's as a result of the podcast. And the police have been really good from that point of view. In that case, in New Zealand in season three, I've been working with them for a while. You know, I think you learn, you know, I guess if you're doing wrongful conviction things, it would be challenging, I could imagine. But like for me, you learn how to deal with the police in a way to kind of keep them on side. And, you know, because like I try to say to people, I mean, ultimately, I think a lot of people think that, you know, as a journalist, you know, doing this kind of work, that you have all the powers of the police. Well, you don't really, you know. I mean, ultimately, we are restricted at a certain point of what we can do. Like, you can expose the truth, but that's different than getting a conviction in court or you know, in sort of that kind of frame. And so people will say to me often, like, oh, have you solved the case or have you this and that? And it's like, well, yeah, but I mean, it's like, what do you class as a success? Do you class a success as getting to the truth of something, or do you class a success as a conviction or a prosecution? And if you do that, well, then at some point we need to work with the police and authorities in order to make that happen. So if you go into it from the point of view that, you know, if the police and everything, and what I'm doing is that it's not going to help you because they're not going to listen to what you might have to say. So I'm always sort of cautious with how I deal with things to make sure I can try and keep them on side, because I'm working for the families in these cases of the victims, you know, first and foremost. And, you know, it's no good for them if I go and turn the police off of what they've been trying to say. So I try to act as that intermediary in a way, you know, so you've got the evidence coming through. Maybe perhaps the family have always felt, you know, a certain way. I'm trying to filter that and say, okay, what's the best way that we can put this forward to the police so that they'll actually pay attention to it, you know?
And you got to be careful with egos, and, you know, it all depends on the individual officer. Now, I'm drawing on memory from years ago, but I seem to remember, because you had an interesting background. I don't need to go through all of it because everybody's going to hear it in the Thursday episode. But if I remember, didn't you had some experience in law enforcement, right?
Law. So, yeah, yeah. So law degree and passed the bar in New Zealand, which is our profs. So I'd never practiced, but that was my background. And that's part of what I guess made me decide to give this true crime podcast thing a go in the first place, is that I felt that I could sort of bring in that objective. You know, I feel like I can do this work and act very objectively. And I think that's important. I think my training in law is part of doing that, although most law affected, to be fair. But
right.
But yeah, so that's my background. And yeah,
and you were an actor for a minute, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, and acting that, yeah, I've done a number of TV shows and commercials and things in New Zealand. And I've transitioned now from actor to podcaster. Turns out more money in podcasting, I guess. Or maybe I'm better at it.
Right. But,
yeah, I think probably.
I tell you what, you were great at it in season one. You know, I loved season one of Guild, and listening to season six now, like, I really love the vibe that you've adapted a little bit the way you present it. And I'm curious, was there anybody or any podcasters that kind of inspired your kind of style? Because to me, it seems very like David Ridgeon-esque. Listening to season six, like, you're rolling tape all the time, you're recording, you know, yourself, I love the, what, you know, when I'm filming a documentary, we call OTFs, the kind of on the fly after an interview, you know, after you finish with something, then you do like a quick little interview where you just kind of like, you know, almost journal, like share your thoughts about what's happening. Like, how did you get to this, you know, to the format you have now? Cause it's great.
Yeah. You know, so it's funny. Yeah. David Ridgeon, like, is it that obvious? You know, I love David's podcasts. And I think, you know, many years ago, I consumed everything that he made, and I loved
it. Right, me too.
Just, man, he's got his, I always just like admired his balls, that he would just go and put himself in situations and knock on people's doors. And I enjoyed his work because, you know, he really took you on that road, like with him, you know, and mm-hmm. that attracted me to what he did. You know, I liked it. And as well, you know, I liked a lot of good podcasts, but yeah, David's work for sure. And in terms of sort of landing where I am, yeah, like, you know, I do a lot of like sort of reflection, you know, type stuff. And the point is, and what I constantly get told is, yeah, people love that idea that you take them along on the journey, that mm-hmm. I don't go out and spend 6 months investigating a case and then go and wrap it up in a nice tidy package with a little bow on it and present the perfect thing. You come along generally on a week-to-week basis, and we're going down the rabbit holes. You know, you're going to come down those with me, and some of them go nowhere. And for some people, they might not like that. Some people like to have a resolution, a conclusion that they like right. that type of tidy bow. But a lot of people don't. And it turns out many, many people like that idea that they can come along on the journey, you know, and I enjoy doing it that way. It makes me feel like, at least if I'm out there on my own, I'm kind of taking people with me in a way.
Dude, I love, I've always been inspired by David's work. I've never had the time I've had many seasons where I start off that way, right? Like, I'm out in the field and I start recording everything and I start trying to produce these great episodes with all these cuts. And by like episode 17, I'm like just in the studio writing a script, banging out. Like, I always end up falling short. And part of it's what you were talking about earlier. Like, there's always something else happening. There's always, like, you know, seven other cases going on that I'm trying to deal with. But I always like that's what I always strive for. And as I was listening to you, I was like, it's something that you do that I haven't listened to, like, the most recent season yet of Someone Knows Something, but I haven't heard David Ridgeon do it before. Is, I love that, like I said, it almost feels like journaling aspect where you just, now what are you doing that? Because are you just like in the car? Because sometimes it's just like, man, I'm feeling, and you just start talking about your day and what you're feeling. I love that part of your show.
You know, like, and I think what's happened is that it's, you know, because you're right. Like, when I first started, I used a Zoom H8, which is kind of a chunky kind of mic mm-hmm. that I speak into. And sort of logistically, that could be kind of challenging or frustrating at times, but it's kind of how my workflow process has changed. So now, you know, I'm mic'd up with a lav mic just all day. So when I wake up and I'm on the road, that's just on. And so it allows me the sort of the ease to be able to just reach down to my waist, press a button and record. And I can just chat without having to hold the mic to my mouth or anything right. like that. And that's what I'll do. And sometimes, you know, you're just dithering on, but sometimes it works out that it's important. But I think it's, I liked people to know what I'm thinking at that time, because oftentimes, you know, by the time you get back in your studio and you're writing a script, well, maybe like you, maybe you've changed what you think compared to what you knew then.
Or don't remember what was, you know,
your feeling.
I always find there's like some like turn of phrase, something that popped in my mind at the time. And then later I sit in front of a computer and I can't for the life of me remember what it was.
Yeah. And I think it can make my job a little bit easier later on if I'm recording that at the time. You know, sometimes too, you're using that sort of journal element of it to help write your script later on, because, you know, it takes you back to that time. And sometimes it's easier to just include the audio straight from the sort of journaling aspect, you know? So yeah, it's just, yeah, it's something I've sort of, I just sort of started doing. And yeah, I think it's sort of, okay, it's kind of a thing that is maybe semi-unique to me to a point.
Experience the freedom of finding the one at Haverty's. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate this summer at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I think it is. I mean, because you have scripted elements, you've got interview elements you put in, you've got this kind of, you know, walking around talking to yourself element to it. And just, but I've actually had my students, you know, I teach investigative journalism at our local high school, and they have a podcast that they put out called Underestimated. And the students that we're about to wrap our year up right now, but the students that are going to be returning next year, I just told them, because I've been, since you and I connected early last week, I've just kind of been binging your season 6. And I told him, like, listen to this, get these ideas, like, be able to think outside the box. I'm curious, and hopefully my listeners are too. But for me, as a, you know, from the production side, what does that production look like? Do you have at this point have a team helping you out? Because what people may not realize is to make what you're making is way more difficult than people think, because you go out and you record this interview, and if we hear 5 minutes of it, you might have recorded an hour of it. And then, like you said, you're running a lab, because I've done the same thing. I use it's called PDR. I don't know if you use something like that, where it just records it. You know, it's a high quality mic, and it records straight to the unit. I'll record that stuff all day, and then you go write a script. But then you got to like index through all that and like figure out which pieces you're going to use and how to. There's a big long process in indexing, and then writing, and then editing. what does that process look for? Do you have people helping you, or are you taking it from soup to nuts?
Ultimately, it's still me that takes. So I sort of have a research team that helps. So, which has only been a relatively recent thing in the last 6 months, through 4 or 5 months. They sort of help with the research elements of finding addresses, names, where people are and things like that. But when it comes to the actual sort of workflow of taking the podcast from the recording to actually writing it and releasing it, that's all me. You know, no one helps with that process. You know, and I think that's the thing. It's people probably don't understand sometimes the challenge of releasing a weekly podcast like that, having to take it through all of those steps.
And the way that we do it, where you're not, like you said, it's not serial. You're not spending a year gathering all this stuff and then packaging it all together and then waiting till all 12 episodes are done and releasing it. Because this is what happens to me is I start the season like that and I try to get a couple ahead and I've got all this stuff and I got these great plans. But as it goes, because during that week when you're going out and recording all this stuff and then you're writing the script and indexing and editing and putting it all together, in the meantime, you're already going back for the next week. Like you're already recording new stuff for next week. And then it ends up like, it's just one of the really cool, I'm just always so impressed when an independent creator like you, without some big massive team, pulls this off. Because like, I know from my experience, I have failed at it so many times. Like you get so far into it and it's like, I just can't keep up. I can't go out and investigate and edit this and index this, and it's a lot. It's impressive how many days. Let me ask you this, because I haven't looked. I started listening and just got into the series season six so much. I'm just binging it through, and I haven't even looked ahead. I know it just wrapped. How many episodes is it?
In the end, I think there are 28 sort of official episodes season. So it's gone for. In that time, I ended up having to take like a 2-3 month break because we were moving house and everything. But yeah, over that 28 episodes, but then we do these debrief episodes now as well, where it's kind of like a bit of a debrief after the episodes. But yeah, 28. And you're right. Like I'm the same. When I start a season, I like to have some in the can before I get going. So, you know, I'll start a new case and it's like, right, well, I'm going to work on the case for a couple months, gather as much as I can so that I've got it. And then I can ideally be 4 to 8 episodes ahead, you know, so I've got that. Right. But then it tends to just, you know.
The buffer shrinks away as you start going.
Yeah, the buffer shrinks away. It does. And I mean, you know, when you start working on a case, there's normally, it's a bit of an orgy of evidence at the beginning, right? You've got lots of people that you can speak to and you've got episodes you can make to tell the story. The further you go along, it becomes harder to find evidence, you know, naturally, and things get tougher. But, you know, the one thing's interesting, when I started this, I had no idea what I was doing. I literally just came up with my own workflow. I didn't even know how other people were recording or making podcasts.
I still don't know how everybody else does. That's why I'm always asking. 11 years in.
Yeah, maybe that's not unique to me.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those formats that's great because, you know, you kind of can come up with your own workflow and your own thing. And it's not, you know, it's not like film where it's maybe more challenging to do that. And I think that's what makes it accessible to some people. And, you know, I hear, you know, you're probably like me and, you know, like that. I hear a lot of people now. I heard someone recently saying, oh, they wanted to start a podcast and literally said the words, oh, but it's so expensive and so difficult. And I was like, it's not expensive, you know, to start a podcast. You just need, you know, at the beginning, you know, just keep it simple. You know, you don't have to be trying to create some big studio thing. You know, over time it will change, right? But to get started, you know, it's fairly simple. Just get out there and do whatever you want to do. If you want to interview people, you know, you don't have to make it look like Joe Rogan or, you know, or what Truth and Justice looks like now. I mean, we didn't all start with all the bells and whistles. But yeah, I mean, that's what I was. I'm digressing here, but that's what I always tell people when they want to start a podcast. I'm just like, well, the first thing is start it. Don't worry about downloads or anything like that. Just
yeah, you know, we interview. You know, it's funny. This whole process is how I end up with seasons. Like I finally, it took me, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years or 10 seasons before I was like, you know, I need a season in between cases to breathe. and to catch, you know, and get caught up. And so I do these interview seasons kind of in between while right now I'm starting to research and getting ready for another season. But, you know, it, during that process, I just interviewed our last episode with Beth Braden with the Time of Death podcast. She's brand new. And so I always like to, you know, talking to people like you have been doing it now for, you know, for 4 or 5 years, 6 seasons of the podcast. You're starting to really get into a flow. And then people like Beth, who was, you know, she was a journalist and was like, I'm going to try to make a podcast and is, you know, doing great and like learning all those lessons along the way. And then everybody finds their, particularly the independent creators where you don't have somebody like telling you what to do and how to do it. Like that's what makes this space so interesting to me to listen to, is because everything's so unique. You know, if you go watch, I'm in the middle of I'm working on a documentary project right now. And it's like, that's, you know, the network tells you this is what we're doing right now. Everybody's doing, you know, these many minutes and these many acts, and this is how you're going to do this and that. And everything ends up being kind of the same.
Yeah.
But in the independent podcast space, everybody's got their complete own, and it ends up with something brilliant like what you've put together here. And I do want to talk about, we should shift and talk a little bit about season 6, because what I've heard so far, which is, you know, your first kind of batch of episodes about your primary case, which, you know, this is a very complex situation where there's a possibility that the guy that was convicted of one murder was possibly involved in two other murders, or two other, they're missing, right? The other two?
Yeah. I mean, the coroner sort of agreed that they're dead and believed that they'd been murdered, but there's no, yeah, there was not enough evidence to really pin a suspect. But this particular guy in this case, Derek Sam, he got convicted for the murder of a 16-year-old girl in a nearby town, Nambour. It's on the Sunshine Coast in Australia, which is a beautiful part of the world. I've been very fortunate that I can go over there and work. But he was sort of, there was a link potentially to two other missing women that were in the area that he was, but, and a couple sort of tenuous, like sort of circumstantial links to him, potentially to these women, but it was never really pinned down. And so my goal was to come in here and see if we could find if there was anything that may have been missed that could, you know, connect these things together or potentially point to something completely different, and ideally try and, you know, find these women if it was possible.
One element of the first case, you talk quite a bit about something that I found really interesting. I'm still like, it's one of those things that when I heard it, I thought, man, that would be great in the U.S. And then I think, well, it wouldn't really work in the U.S. because of the way our sentencing works. But I like the idea, and then I don't like it in different parts. Because it's like, if I'm talking about, you know, am I talking about wrongful conviction space? Or am I talking about, you know, somebody that's legitimately, it's an interesting concept. But Australia has a relatively new law, right, that is no body, no bail. Now, for listeners to understand, the Australian, as many other developed countries, handle prison very differently than the U.S. Where for us, it's like, you know, throw them in prison, throw away the key. You know, especially for a murder, you're going to be there for life. That's it, and you're probably not getting out. Where in our, I've bitched about this many times, that our criminal justice system is not built around rehabilitation at all. It's supposed to be, but it's punitive. But many other countries, and it seems like Australia is one of them, really focus more on rehabilitation. So, you know, even with a murder conviction, they may be eligible for parole in, say, in this case, what, 15 years he was eligible for parole?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same in New Zealand. I mean, parole eligibility for a life sentence can be a relatively short period of time, 7 to 15 years or something like that, depending on the situation. But yeah, the no body, no parole law in Australia is, it's a contentious one for many reasons. And, you know, as someone yourself who focuses on wrongful conviction, you can obviously see the potential conflict here, which is, well, if a person's innocent, how could they ever know where the body is? So I guess they're never getting out of prison. I guess the fundamental issue with the no body, no parole. And I think my sort of take on it is that we live in a world where hopefully, and we know that this isn't the case, but where the justice system believes they don't get it wrong. So,
right.
I like, well, if we live in a world where we can assume that some people are wrongfully convicted. Well, what kind of justice system is that? So they're just going to assume that they get it right every time. So these people are always...
It doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, right? Which we know is BS. But yeah, and I mean, of course, and in this case, so they brought this law in Queensland in 2017. So Australia is much like the states, you know, they're broken into different states as well. So each one has their own sort of government, and then there's the federal government and so on. So they do have variations in law between some of the states. But Queensland brought in the no body, no parole in 2017. And of course, he said, well, how could I know where the body is? Because I didn't do it. And, you know, the argument people have is, well, man, he could just get out. So he was eligible to get out even under this law, you know, 10 years ago, or you know, well, what is it, 2026 now? I mean, almost 10 years. But people say, well, who would stay in prison? Like, why would you stay in prison if you knew where the body, if you knew where the body was? And yeah, it's an interesting one. But in this case, the argument I think the police have is that the reason he hasn't said where the body is because there's two other women in the same spot. And if he was to say, there's Jessica's remains, of course they're going to search that area. And if they're going to find these other missing women, well, then he's just going to be charged for those as well. And he's going to end up going away for those. So that's the theory the police have as to why he hasn't said where the body is.
Yeah, in that case in particular, it introduces this whole other conundrum that it makes you think constantly throughout the whole process, because every time it comes up, and just to, I think we've made it pretty clear, but you know, the way it is set up in Australia, in a case like this one where Jessica's presumed murdered, he's been convicted of the murder, but her body has never been found, and he's obviously claimed he's innocent and refuses to tell anybody where the body is because he claims that he's innocent. They will not let him get paroled until he tells them where the body is. It's in the law.
Yeah. So, I mean, technically he could have been let out based on, and this is the thing. So when he was convicted, you know, you have like your minimum parole term. He passed that time, you know, 10 years ago, but he was convicted in his original sentence, which was, you know, we're going back to like 2000 when he was originally sentenced. And at that time, that law didn't exist. So he was told, you know, you've got life in prison with, you know, like 15-year parole period. So that period sort of came. But just at that time, that's when they brought in this law. And the family in Jessica's case, in this instance, they campaigned hard for that law. They were a big part of that law being brought in Queensland because they were concerned that if he got paroled under his original conditions, that the body, their last chance of ever finding Jessica was going to go with that. And his sort of, his lawyers were arguing, well, this is not fair because you're changing the rules. Like when he was sentenced, that's what the sentence was. Now you're effectively changing that sentence without it ever going through a courtroom or anything. You know, so but you can see sort of both sides of the story, I guess. But is he really innocent? I don't know. I don't know about it in this case.
Well, and that's the thing is you can see how it would be a perfect situation for how that law would work in this case if it was just Jessica's case. Because it's like, listen, you're going to give these families their closure and tell them where the body is, and then you're done. Then you can go. You can get out. So, you know, that's how it effectively would work. But this one gets more complicated because there's a lot of speculation that he's connected to two other murders. And probably if he is, hid those bodies in the same place.
Yeah. So,
yeah. It's a wild, wild ride. The case. Did you without giving away any spoilers, even for me, because I'm getting ready to go on for my wife and I for the first vacation we've taken together in 10 years. You'll get this at some point. Our kids are just now all like getting to be adults. And for the first time in 10 years, we're taking a vacation with just the two of us.
Wow.
And we're taking a train ride all the way across the states, all the way out to some tiny little town in Montana. So I'll have plenty of time to continue listening to the podcast. But so without specifics and spoilers, do you feel like you made progress in any of the three cases, or how are you feeling about it?
We'll be right back.
Experience the freedom of finding the one at Haverty's. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate this summer at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know, it's been the most challenging season of the podcast in so many ways. As you know, you have some cases you work where it's, you know, the evidence comes, you find witnesses pretty easily. There seems like a story there to be told, but this was one that was more difficult. And some of the, you know, two of the disappearances, these women just vanished off the face of the earth with virtually no evidence at all. In one of the cases in particular, Anne Glassop was she went missing. And it's one of those cases where you're just going over these tiny details again and again. You know, her car sort of leaves in the morning. Her parents hear the car leave. You know, they say she left in a hurry. Her car is found parked just down the road. She's never seen. And there's no one knows where she ended up. And yeah, throughout the podcast, eventually someone comes forward with a very interesting lead in relation to her disappearance and something that's never been heard before, and the police weren't aware of. But of course, the witness had passed away. But I felt like in the end, in that case, we perhaps made some progress. But I would say that it was all very attritional in this case, and in the end, it was one of those ones where the finale episode, it has the best interview of all. We do find another suspect, and you know, I managed to go and fly and track this guy down with some real right. David Ridgens type stuff. It was one of those ones with leaves the listeners in the end to make up their own mind and have their own opinion on what they think. And from what I've seen, people sort of go either way. But in terms of, you know, like working with police in this one, not yet at this stage, but it doesn't mean there's no progress. Just like I said earlier, it's like, how do you define the success, right? Yeah, certainly more people know about the cases, and you feel like if there was anything to be flushed out, there's been so much exposure of the podcast and what I've been doing over there, you'd hope that we would have flushed it out. So it's kind of just good for families to know that.
Yeah, and it seems like the families are pretty supportive of you doing this.
Yeah, you know, that's something that after I started, I think after my first season, you know, it became something that I realized was very important for me, is that if like if I was going to work on a case, I have to have the in of the family, like of the mm-hmm. victims, because, you know, they're the gatekeepers to much information in a story. I feel, you know, there are stories out there where some families just genuinely, they just don't want to do it. You know, they just sort of, they've moved on and they don't want to go back there. You see both types. So I'd hate to go into a case and think I'm doing something just because I want to do it and the family don't even want it right. to happen. So yeah, you know, in this case, yeah, I worked with two of the victims' families closely. One of them in this case that disappeared was a backpacker from the UK. Her parents are very elderly and I didn't end up making contact with them. It was quite challenging, but they had made it clear that they didn't really do that anymore. But I was more focused on a couple of them. But yeah.
Before we wrap up, you know, I haven't kept up. I think I was in season two was the last time I've had a chance to listen. If you reflect back through your previous five seasons, do you have kind of a top couple of moments or things you're real proud of in those seasons?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the seasons I guess that have had the most sort of objective result would be season three and season four. Season three, which is has ended up being a really important because, you know, it's the Finding Heidi is the season part of my podcast Guilt, but, you know, finding new witnesses in this case that really changed the entire movement of this case and what really happened filled in a lot of that story. And that case goes on today. Like the guy that was convicted, his conviction recently got quashed in the Supreme Court in New Zealand. And they're just deciding now whether there's going to be a retrial. And part of that Supreme Court decision was they had a takedown order on my podcast because the information that was literally in the podcast, his defense team asked for certain parts of it to be taken down because they believed it was so prejudicial if there's a retrial. So it's a very current case and it's very interesting.
Did you end up having to take part of your podcast down?
Yeah, they were pretty good. They were quite specific. But yeah, so if you do try to listen to that season now, there are certain episodes you can't listen to because it was a Supreme Court order. But I guess it tells you you're doing something right.
Right.
You know, and it is relevant stuff. So we're going to see what's going to happen in the coming months if that case goes to retrial. So that's like a proud case for me because, you know, you're making a real world effect on these cases. And the other one is, I mentioned earlier, Alana's case, season four in Australia over in Melbourne. Because I'm proud of that one in particular because it was a case that was never really looked at as being suspicious by police. They never really investigated it. And we've managed to completely flip that on its head, you know, and it's one where I know that had I not come along and done that, it would have never happened. And so I know I can sort of hold my head up on that one and say, you know, made a big difference there. And that one's ongoing. And, you know, and in that case too, I had to put myself into some pretty hairy situations to get there. I mean, dealing with heroin dealers and sort of gang-related mobster kind of characters and going and tracking these guys down and just confronting them, you know. I think back now and you know, I had some balls, that's for sure. But, you know, but it all worked out for the best.
Now that you're a family man, how does your wife look at, is she aware of some of these risks that you're taking? How is that working out?
You know, it's funny because the other day I had to fly down south to go confront this other guy and he was apparently a pretty gnarly sort of dude. And I said to my wife on my way down, I sent her a message after I got off the plane. I said, hey, look, I'm picking up the rental car now. I'm going to drive straight to these flats. So I just said, this is the address I'm going to. If you don't hear from me in a little while, like 3 hours or something, you know, call the police. And anyway, so then...
my wife would lose her mind if I did that. I just have to come home and be like, everything was fine. She would flip out. How does your wife handle that text?
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that, yeah, so then this interview, he ends up being there, right? And so this interview ends up going for like nearly 4 hours. And I come out thinking, shit, like my phone, my wife's going to be like upset. And I look, no messages from her. And I'm just like, I'm okay, just to let you know. And she's just sort of, sweet. She, you know, she's pretty chill, man. Like, I think... I think she doesn't get so worried now, although I think she's just making me download this app now, which so that she can see where I am or something, some kind of thing. So,
yeah.
She's okay with it, I guess. She understands. And I think she just trusts that I wouldn't put myself in too crazy a situation, but yeah, she doesn't worry too much, I don't think.
That's awesome. Yeah, my if I try to tell my wife anything, even when, you know, I do a lot of like, I go out west bear hunting and things like that. So I put myself in some gnarly situations in a different environment. And she's always like, don't even tell me. I don't want to know. So that's great that she's so supportive of all that. One other thing you just mentioned in passing, when we right before we hit record, if there's a place people can go check it out, you said you guys are starting to do some stuff on YouTube. Is there a place people can go check that out?
Yeah, so we've recently just started a YouTube channel. It's, you know, it's obviously video is a thing, then podcasting that's sort of grown obviously a lot. It's kind of hard for an investigative podcast to have a video, right? But you know, I mean, obviously, unless you're going to have a cameraman following you around all the time, it's not really going to work. But yeah, we've sort of added a YouTube element. If people want to go find that, it's just, you can look up The Guilt Podcast on YouTube and you'll find that. But our website, theguiltpodcast.com, is amazing. My guy there, Jacob Saffel, he puts together something really incredible. I don't think there's any podcast that I'm aware of that has a better website than what we've got in terms of a back end with maps and all the points and video diaries and a lot of stuff. So yeah, big thanks to all the team. But yeah, if you want to check it out, head to the website and you'll find everything there.
Awesome. And you said it sounds like there's going to be a season 7 in the works. You're not done yet.
Oh, I'm not done yet. Now we're in this for the long haul now. Yeah, season 7, you know, it's going to be back in New Zealand this time. We're still sort of deciding what case we're going to do. And as you'll know, you know, as things go on, you sort of realize that you know, the case you choose, it can change a family's life. It can change the history of a case, you know, so you have to think about it carefully, what you're going to do and decide where you're going to put the weight of what you've built in terms of your following and your listeners behind, you know. So, you know, you have to take some care in what case we're going to choose, but hopefully something that we can make a difference in, which is the whole point.
That's great. Well, Ryan, it's been great catching up with you again, man, and congratulations on all your success. And like I said, I absolutely love what you're doing. The format that you got going on now is great. For audience, the podcast is called Guilt. Check it out. There's 6 seasons. Season 6 has wrapped, so you have 6 full seasons to listen to, and season 7 coming soon. Ryan, thanks again for joining me, man. It's always tricky with our time zone difference, but yeah. I'm glad we were able to work it out.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Fantastic. Thanks for having me on again.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Experience the freedom of finding the one at Haverty's. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate this summer at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.